This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the Bet Rivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Francesa Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Mike Francesa Podcast, brought to you, as always, by the good folks at Bet Rivers. And remember, for all of you wagering these, just download the always updating and new and improved Bet Rivers app for all of your needs and for some fun and for games and promotions and everything else. And later this week, before we get to Selection Sunday, which we are now a week away, we will have some things to talk about as far as the podcast going forward, which we'll talk about that in the days to come. Now, free agency in the NFL is still 2 days away. The negotiating period, and let's be honest, the negotiating period, a lot of places already started, but it's officially allowed to start at noon. But unlike baseball, where you have a lot of guys still unsigned, in football, the top of the free agent market works at lightning speed. I mean, everything just happens so quickly. You better be ready. You better have had your plan ready. Because if you want someone, if you want a top guy, okay, now you always have to deal with them going back to their teams. And I am not in the least bit surprised that Chris Jones went back to Kansas City, because Kansas City couldn't lose Chris Jones. He's that good. And they didn't, to the tune of a lot of money, which we'll get to. But things happen very quickly. If you're the Jets and you want to lock up a key offensive lineman, and there are a couple out there they should be targeting, specifically one, you better move quick. You better move very quickly, because it does not happen at slow speed. It happens very quickly. Now, already you've seen a lot of movement with the quarterbacks, okay? Mayfield, as expected, back to Tampa. As a matter of fact, Tampa, they got their guys back. I mean, they got Mayfield back. 3 years, $100 million, 50 of it guaranteed. They got Evans back, 2 years, 52. They got Winfield on a non-restrictive tag. He's back. So they got their big guys back. But you've already seen now Russell Wilson goes to the Steelers. The Russell Wilson thing is funny. Russell Wilson woke up one day in Seattle after all the success they had. Years of success. Went to two Super Bowls. Won one. Got a lot of money. Had a really great career going. And all of a sudden he thought, hey, you know what? I'm going to play differently. I'm going to play like Mahomes. And, of course, it didn't work in Seattle. Now, again, goes to Denver, where it never gets started. And now he's going to be in Pittsburgh for $1 million, 1.2 if you count veteran minimum. The Broncos will be paying him $37.8 million just to get rid of him. And you know what? He will play the way he played in Seattle when they won. Defense first, running game, and then the quarterback. That's what the coach will demand, and they'll win. I mean, they might not win big, but they'll win. But they always win. I mean, they're always hunting around the playoffs. We know that. And they'll do that again with Russell Wilson. Very interesting to see what's going to happen with Cousins and Fields. You know Fields is going to be moved somewhere because they are going to draft the quarterback number one. So the Bears are going to move Fields. I would think still to Atlanta. That's where I thought all along. Cousins Atlanta has been a flirtation, but I guess it could still happen. But if you're asking me, I think Cousins goes back to Minnesota. I've always felt that. You know, he likes it there. He likes living there. His family likes it there. He's got offense there. He's got a comfortable offense there. He's got targets there. I think he goes back. And you look at how many players have already gone. You know, Kansas City knew they had these people to keep in place. The owner, they can keep in place forever. Andy, they can keep in place as long as they want. You have Mahomes. You have Kelce. They needed Chris Jones back. They got him. $158 million for five. Of course, he never sees every bit of that money. But the early report was $95 guaranteed. Now it looks like when you look under the real hood, it's somewhere around $60 million is guaranteed. It doesn't matter. He's going to be there for the rest of his career in Kansas City. He got paid $158.75 for 5 years, if you want the exact contract. Now, again, he won't live out that entire contract, but he'll live out at least 3 years of it, you would think. T. Higgins is the only guy who got franchised where he's a restricted. He's restricted. He's franchised. The other guys are all non-restrictive franchise tags, which means T. Higgins gets 21-8 at wide receiver for being that. The Ravens signed their big lineman back. Pittman went back to the Colts. Allen to the Jags. Johnson to the Bears. Burns. Winfield. Dotson to the Rams. I mean, go on and on and on. All these guys go. Mayfield to the Bucks. Evans is off the board, too. We mentioned that. We'll find out about Cousins real soon. And then you're left with the what's at the top of the free agent market. What's left at the top? I mean, at the top of the market was Chris Jones, without any question. I mean, he was as good a guy who as if he had been in free agency, he would have been maybe the best player ever to hit free agency. That's how good he is. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he is a big reason why the Chiefs have won 3 Super Bowls in 5 years. They don't win them without him. Cousins, I just have a feeling, goes back to Minnesota. Christian Wilkins changed his teams at defensive tackle. Hunter, I think, finally changed his teams. You know that they can't tag him. And he's held out before. I think he goes. If I'm the Jets, and I know you could say this is going to be expensive and it's risky, I sign Tyron Smith because I need that kind of offensive lineman. Last year he played 942 snaps, the most he's played since 2018. He's been a vastly underpaid player. When he plays, he is a superb player. Is he hurt often? Yes. Is there risk? Yes. Well, why do you think there's an offensive tackle of that ability on the market? There are never offensive tackles on the market, ever. Good offensive tackles don't hit the market. Guys like Tyron Smith don't hit the market. He hit the market because he's 33 years old and he's always been injury prone. And the Cowboys are watching their pennies. So if you're the Jets, lock them up. Barkley, and I don't think it's that big a deal where any of these backs go because they're all... It just shows you how much the back has to fight to get a second or third contract. Because look at the names that are in free agency at running back. It's a who's who. I think Barkley is either going to sign with the Cowboys, the Texans, or the Eagles. I think the Cowboys are first, though. If I were the Eagles, I'd sign Pollard. I think Pollard as a change of pace guy would fit perfectly in their offense. I think he'd be a great fit in their backfield. And put him back in his role. He's not a lead back. He's not a guy you want to hammer inside off the tackle on first and 10. That's not his game. He's a change of pace after you've pounded the line for a little while with the big back or with the lead back, and then you use him to break plays and to be explosive out of the backfield. Bring him in on second down and long or third down and five. That's what he is. He's a guy who is very good at catching the ball out of the backfield, very explosive out of the backfield, and he can break plays out of the backfield. I love him back in his role. Loved him in his role. He never should have left his role. There are edge rushes in this draft. If you need one, there are guys available. There are linebackers in the draft. And there's running backs galore in the draft. There's a couple offensive linemen. There's even offensive linemen I would dabble with. There's wide receivers, but there's wide receivers in every walk of life. I mean, there's a million wide receivers in the draft. You don't need to go to free agency and spend a lot of money for a wide receiver. You really don't. And it's going to be interesting to see where Jacoby Brissett winds up, where Tyrod Taylor winds up. Because those guys are back, are number two quarterbacks who can play. And if you learn anything, you learn that a number two quarterback who can play is key. Is very key. You know, because it can change a season. You can put Tyrod Taylor in for 5 or 6 weeks and you can win. You could put Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett came in 2 games last year, and he flipped the games upside down. Both games. It's the only games he played. He flipped the games upside down. And I'd also be fascinated to see who Sean Payton has his eye on, because I guarantee he's got his eye on a quarterback, either in the draft or somebody's quarterback that's now going to be hitting the bench. A lot of talk about Sam Howell. You know, Sean's going to have his eye on someone and think he can fix someone. But when you got guys like Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, okay, Pollard, I mean, these guys are good players. I mean, a couple of them had. I mean, let's be honest. Henry couldn't have a better career. I mean, a guy like that. Now, you don't want to sign him. You know, he's not going to get a commanding contract. It's just not going to happen. No running back who's on a second or third contract is getting a commanding contract. It's not happening. Nor will Barkley. It just does not happen. Austin Eckler's in there. There's a couple of guys in there I like. I told you, I like Pollard a lot, putting him back in that role. I like him a lot. I also would be very interested if my defense needed it. All right, if it's a need, I would be very interested in the guy out of Miami. I think that Van Ginkle's a very interesting player. Versatile player. I like what I see from high motor. I like everything I see about him. I think he's an interesting guy. I would not go near Chase Young. Chase Young is going to watch. He's going to really have to fight for his money because, you know what? He's been a complete bust. He is not the player they thought he was going to be. So it's going to be, there's a lot of interesting guys there. Now, there's some positions where there's just not very much there, obviously. There's not a lot there at quarterback. There's nothing there except Tyron at tackle. You could probably play on when you, most people list him as a guard, but he can play right tackle. So you could, to get him at his age, 26, you watch. He is going to be very much in demand. And if I were the Jets, I'd be very interested in him also because of his versatility. You could play him at guard. You could play him at tackle. He's not a left tackle. He's a right tackle. But you know what? You play him at right tackle. You have Tyron Smith at left tackle. You have an offensive line. Or you could play him at guard. They should be all over this offensive line stuff. They have to build that. I don't care about I can find them a wide receiver on the third round of the draft that could step in and help them. That's how many wide receivers there are. They are all over the place. You can get them late one. You can get them two. You can get them three. You can get them everywhere. There are a million of them. So do not go crazy. Now, listen, they're not all going to be, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, that's a rare product. Or the kid out of Washington, who is a legitimate top five draft prospect. But, you know, there's a million fast guys that can make a difference. So, I don't see it. Look at how many times the guy who caught the Super Bowl winning touchdown wasn't even on the Chiefs last year. He was on the Jets. And he wound up on the Chiefs. All right? How about Scantling? He was in the doghouse so many times. And what he did. Now, Rice became their guy. As he should have been all year. You know, I screamed about that all year. He was their guy. But Scantling made big plays. You can have wide receivers come out of anywhere. So do not worry about them in free agency. You don't have to go out and spend a ton of money, which you need to spend on the offensive line, and you're going to get, listen, Wenyu's going to cost a lot of money. Smith's going to cost a lot of money. You get both of them, they are both going to be high-ticket items. But that's what you have to pay for. And I'm telling you, if the Jets aren't move one, move two, move three on that offensive line, they are just plain, not even stupid, they are out of it. You must build a prominent force in front of this quarterback. And listen, I don't take seriously his talk of playing four more years. Take it a quarter at a time now. Take it a game at a time now. But if you build him the right offensive line, he can play a couple of more years and you can win with him. He's that good. He's great. He's not good. He's great. But you have to protect him at a very high level now because of his advanced age and the fact that he's brittle, which also comes with being his age. And as we get the free agency here, and watch the top of it because it's critical. Hey, if you're late to the dance in the NFL free agent market, you miss out. You are then going down the aisle that has the third-rate merchandise. You have already lost out. A lot of the guys are already picked over. They're gone already. They went back to their teams. They got tagged. I mean, that group swept through. When you count those two things already, a lot of the guys are gone that you thought were on the free agent market. And this top group, they'll be gone in a hurry. So if you're targeting a guy, especially these linemen, because there aren't any offensive linemen there. There's a couple, and they're going to be expensive. And I don't want to hear you can't pay for them, because you know what? If you don't buy them, and you try to risk going in there and rebuilding that line with a bunch of garbage, you are going to live to regret it. You're going to lose your job. GM will be fired. The coach will be fired. The only reason they're not fired already is because of Rodgers being there. But they would have been fired already. I mean, Woody basically said they would have been fired already. If you listen to them, they haven't done their job. They've been completely inept. Their record is disgraceful. They're getting a reprieve because of a very rare situation. But that means protect him. Eubank took one look at Namath and said, we have to protect this arm. Case closed. I don't want to hear anything else. And he was a great football architect. So get the message. This is about the offensive line. First, second, third, and fourth. And how different is baseball free agency from this? I mean, this moves at a absolute lightning speed. Warp speed. It's spinning already. It's started yet. And they own the offseason. I mean, look at the attention they get. So for the Jets, I don't want to hear anything except the offensive line. For the Giants, you know what? So much chaos has been created around this organization now. It's very sad. You know, it looked like they had finally found their guys. The GM and the head coach looked like they were very much in lockstep. They had a lot of success in year one. They were daring. They were smart. They did things well. They looked to be tremendous unity of decision, unity of communication, unity of movement, and everything they did. And now it looks like a complete disaster again. It looks like nobody knows what's going on. Coaches wanting to leave. Coaches bad-mouthing the head coach. The head coach can't get along with anybody. Now he throws temper tantrums. He does this, he does that, he does this, that. You know, GM says this, the GM says that. GM says this, GM says that. And on top of it, everyone's like, oh, well, you know the relationship between Mara and Belichick. Remember one thing here. There is no relationship between Tisch and Belichick. The Tishes came in when Belichick was gone. They never had anything to do with him, unlike the Maras, who had a lot to do with him, a lot to do with his young days in the league, his many years with the Giants, his success as a defensive coordinator there, in the Parcells team, the whole thing. Great relationship between the Maras and Belichick. No one would discount that for a second. But no relationship. Zero. And you have to think that there's a chance that Titus might not want him to come in and be given, you know, absolute power. Now, I don't know that he has to have that. He might be more willing to work than people understand, that people might think. I think on the outside, people would always think he's going to get absolute power because of who he is. And how great is the opportunity as we sit here on the brink of a new season for Andy Reid? Andy Reid, you know, for many years when he was in Philly, I used to have to defend him. He used to get beat up in Philadelphia. And I understood their frustration. They won a lot of games. They didn't win a lot of playoff games. They didn't win championship games. They were there every year. They won a lot of regular season games. But they were frustrated because they'd get to the NFC title game and then they'd fail. Or they got to the Super Bowl and they failed. I mean, they didn't play badly in that Super Bowl. The last drive is still a hard thing to understand. I don't even really feel like I've ever gotten a full explanation about that, but that's the way it goes. But think about, as at 65 years of age, and Andy, whose birthday is coming up, will be 66 in a couple days. And all he did in Philly was win. But he didn't win the big game, which frustrated, you know, the city to no end. I mean, when you think about it, Andy went into Philly as a 41-year head coach, year old head coach, and after 1 year ran off 11-11, 12-12, and 13. Had a bad year, ran off a bunch more winning years. Had a bad year, had a 500 year, then had a bad year. And he was gone. He was out of work, you know, for like 2 hours since he's gotten to Kansas City. In the regular season, he's won 11-9, 11-12, 10-12, 12-14, 12-14, 11, and has won 3 Super Bowls, including 2 in a row, 3 in the last 4 years. The last 5 years, he's won 3, and he's won 2 in a row, and he goes for 3 in a row. This guy now, he won 128 games in the regular season, 130 games in Philadelphia, 128 games in Kansas City. He already is the fourth winningest coach of all time. He's, you know, closing in on 300 wins, which is insanely rarefied air. He's won 26 playoff games. If he wins 300 games, wins 4 Super Bowls, 3 of them in a row, which has not been done in the Super Bowl era. Nobody's won 3 Super Bowls in a row. For a variety of reasons, the teams that could have done it didn't do it. Steelers won 4 in 6 years. They didn't win 3 in a row. Cowboys won 3 in 4 years. The third one with Switzer didn't win 3 in a row. The great Niner teams, thwarted by the Giants, did not win 3 in a row. The Packers that won Super Bowls 1 and 2 were not around for Super Bowl 3. Nobody's won 3 in a row. If he does that, you're looking at a coaching career that will rank in the top 3 of all time. Of all time. 300 wins, 30 playoff wins, 4 championships, 3 in a row in the Super Bowl era, 4 Super Bowls. It will be a career the likes of which, now, we'd have 2 retiring together that will probably be untouchable. If you're going to do what Andy or Belichick did and get up to that kind of level, you are going to have to win 10 or more games for 25 years. In this day and age, I don't think it can be done anymore. 25 years worth of 10 a year or 11 a year. It's insanity to think somebody can do that. But here we have 2 guys. One guy who's a handful away from the all-time record, Shula's all-time record. And then Andy, who's, you know, closing in. You know, on 300 wins. Which is, a remarkable, remarkable feat. When you think about it. An absolute remarkable feat. 258 regular season wins. 26 postseason wins. Just remarkable. And that will take... I mean, think about it. I don't think anyone would approach either one of their careers again. That's just, it's hard to fathom. Somebody getting anywhere close to that. And that's what's on the table this year, which is a big reason why Chris Jones is back there. Because they know they can't do it without him. He has been invaluable. He has been that good in so many playoff spots. In so many big games that he had to be re-signed, and he was, for the outrageous sum of $158.75 million for 5 years at his defensive tackle position. We're going to get a couple of emails in before we go, but I wanted to mention a couple of things about baseball. I know everybody's very excited about Soto's start, and they should be. That home run he hit yesterday was, out into the parking lot was incredibly impressive, and he's off to a start that makes you just, dance and think about things that can happen in the regular season at Yankee Stadium with him batting as he is from the left side and having the kind of, power that he does. And, he's been ultra impressive so far. 4 home runs, 10 RBIs, and 18 at-bats, hitting .500 in spring. Yes, it's spring, but you know what? Still nice to see him hitting these monster shots. Yesterday went, 447 yards. You don't see balls hit like that in spring training that often. I mean, that's kind of rare. But beware of this Yankee pitching staff. Beware. I am concerned about the pen, and I am concerned about the starting pitching. Obviously, a lot of it's going to hinge on what Rodon does. I'm not a fan. In any way am I a fan or a believer. I'm not expecting a whole lot except disappointment. So will they turn around and add a pitcher? Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I understand they're being very conscious about certain things financially, but I still wouldn't be surprised if they did. A couple of emails when we return.
You're listening to the Mike Francesa Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Mike Francesa Podcast at gmail.com. That's where you send your emails. Let's get to a couple right now. Do you think the Yankees should have signed Josh Hader? I don't think it had to specifically be him, but I do think they should have added another bullpen arm. Yes, I do. Ryan, with Patino, do you think he will take the Johnnies back to the Final Four before he retires? Or I should say to the Final Four, because he's never taken them to the Final Four. They have been to the Final Four. And he has been to the Final Four on multiple occasions with multiple schools and won championships with multiple schools. But I would think there would be a very good chance that over the next 6 years, considering the opportunities to get players that will be available, I'll be very interested to see how they attack this year. Meaning, how do they attack? Do they attack locally? Do they attack in conference? Do they attack from the mid-major, or do they even attack from the major situation? So obviously they will have plenty of money in the NIL. Nobody can have enough, but they will have plenty to deal with, and they will have some holes to fill, but they will be able to do that. So it'll be interesting to see. As far as their status right now, I think with one more win, they are in the NCAA tournament. I think if they would lose, I think right now they are in the field, but not secure. I think that they could get knocked out with a loss. They could get knocked out with a rash of upsets. I don't think in the major conferences you'll see that many of those upsets, because so many of the big conferences are going to be, you know, the SEC champ, the Big 12 champ, those are the two best leagues. I'd put the Big East third. The champion's going to come from one of the teams that's already in the NCAA tournament. I would be shocked if it didn't. And the Big 12, you're talking about nine teams. I think that the Big Three are obviously seeded. Connecticut will be a one. I think that Marquette will be a two, because they'll take the Kolek injury into effect over the last couple of games. And the fact that he didn't play, you should, because he's that important to the team. I think that'll make them a two, and I think Creighton will be a three. So you have those three seeded. Just like the SEC has five teams that'll be seeded in the top one, two, three, four. And the Big 12 might have six teams that are seeded, one, two, three, four. Including there's three lock ones, Connecticut, Houston, and Purdue. The fourth one will come from among Tennessee, Arizona. Arizona lost to USC last weekend. Tennessee lost to Kentucky, but that's not a bad loss. And Carolina beat Duke for the second time. Carolina, Arizona, or Tennessee will be the fourth one, one of those three teams. The other two will be on the two line. Seton Hall's in. That's four. I think St. John's in right now. If they lost to Seton Hall on Thursday and they play in the 4-5 game at 2:30, remember their next win after that, the next game after that will come against, if they beat Seton Hall that day, the next game's going to be UConn on Friday. So they don't lose anything by losing it. They don't gain anything unless they play them a, you know, if they played them a white knuckler, that would be gaining by losing. So there is something of a moral victory that can be gained there with the committee watching. If they played a bad game there, that could hurt them a little bit, but they would have already, I think, locked up their bid by beating and playing in that game on Friday, because they would have beaten Seton Hall on Thursday. If they lose to Seton Hall on Thursday, they are not automatically out, but you might want to hold your breath going to the weekend. Villanova, I think, lost a heartbreaker to Creighton the other day, was down huge in the game, came roaring back, tied the game, and then lost it with 0.2 seconds left on a jumper. It was a heartbreaking defeat. They really needed the game. I think they need, they're going to beat DePaul, which they're not going to gain anything by. And then they have to play in the tournament on Thursday night. It would behoove them to win at least one game to get in. I think either Villanova, Providence, or St. John's will be on the outside looking in. I think if St. John's wins one game, they're automatically in. I think they could be in even if they did lose a tight game to Seton Hall, but I wouldn't want to take it to the bank. They are right now ahead of, in my mind, they're ahead of Villanova and who they beat twice, and Providence. And I think the Big Three and Seton Hall are already in as the Big East, which should be very interesting, gets underway starting on Wednesday. So as far as back to the original question was would Pitino, considering his coaching prowess, and he is a brilliant coach, you cannot take that away from him. He's made some missteps this year. The comments he made after that bitter loss were ill-advised. They didn't kill him, though, and they are building a new practice facility. So I do think he will have one glory run sometime this, in the next 5 years with St. John's. If he stays, with him, you never know if he's going to stay put for 5 years. Somebody else could offer him a bigger job and he might take it. You never know with him. He's quirky. Grew up listening to The Fan, okay? I remember when the station was born, okay? So a lot of people. Used to have it on throughout the day. I miss See You and the Dog. Now it seems like sports radio has changed to a different kind of talk where it's not always about sports. Is there a place for old-time sports talk? Hey, first of all, you got to understand the world changes. The challenges, the sports radio change, the competition for sports radio comes at it from a different direction and with different vehicles than when we were around. We were in the right place at the right time in the medium, in the world of sports. We created a tremendous niche for ourselves, which was new, which allowed us to be first in everything we did and allowed us to be the leaders in everything we did. It was a very good opportunity. It was also a very big challenge. But with that challenge comes great opportunity. And we obviously, did very well in our roles there. I mean, we did very well. Everything changes. I know I get that all the time from people who stop me wherever it may be and say, hey, now they don't talk about sports as much. They talk about themselves. They talk about all kinds of nonsense. And hey, guy talk was very prevalent when we were around. We just didn't do a lot of it. We didn't believe in it. But it was there. A lot of the formats, a lot of the even CBS sports stations did a lot of guy talk. We didn't. We never did scatological humor. We never did sexual humor. We didn't do that stuff. We didn't do TNA. We didn't do all that stuff. That wasn't what we were about. We were loud. We were obviously over the top many times. We were very passionate about what we did and often very irreverent about what we did, but we still were about sports. But you know what? The world changes. That's the way I look at it. And what's right for when we worked might not be exactly right for now. You got to take, you know, the competition's not the same. The rating system's different. I mean, so many things are different that I think you just have to judge the people who are there now in their own context. It's like same thing. I mean, oh, I want to judge Babe Ruth against, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. I want to judge Bonds against Ruth. You know, they're different worlds. They lived in different times. They faced different challenges, different obstacles, different positives, different negatives. I mean, so you have to understand that. Everything to its own generation, to its own time. You know, we had our day. We have been very fondly remembered for what we accomplished, which I'm very happy and proud about. And that's all we can do. You know, I don't talk much about the what's going on now because, number one, I don't listen to it that much. And it's not because, you know, I'm making a comment about it. It's because I just, you know, it's not what I want to do. I'm not going to sit in the house and listen to it. And I do hear it in the car from time to time. But you know what? It's not what I want to spend my time with right now. It's just, you know, things change. And you have other responsibilities. You also have other things you want to be involved with. So it's just a different time. Peter, I don't know what the Yankees were thinking about when they signed. Well, listen, I've already been through Rodon a lot. I'm not a fan. I don't like his attitude. I don't like his makeup. I don't like the product I've seen. He was awful last year. I don't trust him as far as I could throw him, and I wish he wasn't on the team. I can't make it any stronger than that. Do you think the offseason needs to be fixed in Major League Baseball with so many free agents still unsigned? There's no way to really fix it. It isn't just about, I mean, it's partially about the approach that Boras takes, but it's not just about Boras. It's about how the major league teams, especially the successful ones, are now building their rosters. That's what it's about and how that impacts free agency. Because when you hit free agency, you're often going to be right around 30, and then people don't want to pay you back into those years. You want average salary to be high, but you also want years that are guaranteed on that contract. Remember, every dollar there, unlike the NFL, every dollar in baseball is guaranteed. And it changes things, and teams don't want to be locked into that. And if you notice, teams are bringing their young, prodigious talent to the majors much quicker, which means they're fundamentally going to be unsound. They're going to make a lot of mistakes. They're going to make a lot of mistakes with their execution and with their instincts that they wouldn't make if they had spent 2 or 3 years getting, you know, being taught and learning their trade. They don't take the time to teach the guys in the minors anymore because they want those years to be part of the major league experience for these players. And they bring these players to the majors now at a very young age. The Braves have done that to success. The Orioles are doing it now to success. And I think it is clearly the standard, becoming quickly the standard. And that will, without a question, impact free agency. We'll see you in a few days.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the BetRivers Network.